Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
Beautiful people, welcome to this Thursday, March 11th, 2021 edition of WKAR's Current Sports. I hope everybody out there is doing well. And folks, this is a bit of a weird show because here I am on the air after or maybe during right now when the Michigan State men's basketball team is playing or faced off against Maryland. I don't know if the game is over by the time you're hearing this or if they're right in the thick of things. You know, if it's like a two-point game going back and forth or maybe a blowout, I have no idea because I am recording the show, as I customarily do, in the morning. And, you know, by the time 1 o'clock rolls around, you know, some events have already happened. And because Michigan State tipped off at 11:30 a.m. in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil Stadium in the Big Ten tournament, I can't really comment on what is going down or has gone down. With the Spartans versus the Maryland Terrapins. So I'm in a bit of a weird space right now. And, you know, I tried to get a great guest by the name of Matt Skoch on the show. Matt has been on before, and he is now doing some extraordinary things when it comes to where we are as a society in the world of sports gambling. And Matt has been a part of that world for a while now, but our schedules didn't match up this morning, and we're going to try and get him on very, very soon. But he's been giving coverage of sports betting for Play Michigan, also hosting Locked On Pistons. So we've talked Pistons with him as well. You know, he's been I'm part of the Detroit news coverage as well. So Matt has done a lot, but we weren't able to get him on today. So we got to shift the dates around. So for me, I'm kind of like tap dancing today. You know, I can't really address the elephant in the room, which is the ongoing or perhaps by now, by 1 p.m. I'm guessing, you know, usually a college basketball game on the airwaves. About 2 hours. So I'm guessing, you know, we're on the back nine of that game right now between Michigan State and Maryland. But I can't really address the elephant in the room because I don't know what's happening right now. So let's hope that Michigan State is handling business. And if they do, that would set up a date against the Michigan Wolverines on Friday. Okay. And, you know, if they do play Michigan, I mean, it will be what they'll play them like three times in the span of less than 2 weeks, which is pretty insane. And, you know, Michigan being the outright Big Ten champions of this year for the Big Ten tournament, they earned that double bye. So they're just maxing, taxing, relaxing and just cooling out, just waiting to see what happens between Michigan State and Maryland. So We'll see. And as I've stated throughout this week, you know, especially I hammered home this on yesterday's current sports. I mean, Michigan State, it doesn't really matter what they do against Maryland in the Big Ten tournament at all, because I believe they're in. They've already done enough to get in. That final stretch heading into the postseason was amazing, and it really padded that resume for Michigan State and convinced the committee that they need to be in. So regardless of what happens, if they beat Maryland or not, you know, and if they beat Maryland, great. You know, for sure, from there on out, it does not matter what they do against Michigan. If they were to win that game today, Michigan State will be in the NCAA tournament. Now, you know, one of the big storylines throughout this college basketball season, you know, in addition to the chatter about, you know, Michigan State being on the bubble and having all of these problems, there are many blue bloods in the college basketball world that have just flat out struggled. And one of those teams is Coach K's Duke Blue Devils. It has been just really shocking what has happened with Duke. I mean, we're used to seeing Duke be in that number. You know, a down year for Duke just doesn't really happen. And this morning, literally right before I began to record today's show, news broke on my phone, courtesy of the ESPN app, that Duke is now out of the ACC tournament after a positive COVID-19 test within the program. Again, got that news just as I was about to record today's show. And, you know, Duke really needed a great showing in the ACC tournament to try and convince the committee that they deserve to be in. You know, unlike Michigan State, which did enough in the regular season, you know, to close out the regular season, Duke didn't. And they lost some really tough games, and they just haven't been great this year. So Duke is out of the ACC tournament. Somebody tested positive. The Blue Devils were scheduled to play Florida State in the quarterfinals today. They beat Louisville 70-56 yesterday to keep those NCAA tournament hopes alive. And, you know, with that win, the Blue Devils actually moved into Joe Lunardi's next four out in his latest bracketology. So, and they still needed, you know, to beat Florida State, probably get another win to receive an at-large bid, you know, on Sunday. So, you know, that next four out on Joe Lunardi's bracket, I mean, they're not quite in. Still work to do. And now, dropping out of the ACC tournament, it is very, very, very unlikely that the Blue Devils will make the NCAA tournament. And, you know, Duke had this incredible streak rolling. You know, Coach K making history, man. They have not missed the Big Dance since 1995. You know, now as we've been talking a lot about, you know, for Michigan State, they have not missed the Big Dance since 1997. So, you know, Duke had 2 years. Coach K had 2 years on Coach Izzo, but yeah, it looks as though Duke isn't going to make it. That's pretty wild. Stadium was the first to report the COVID-19 issues for Duke and the withdrawal from the ACC tournament. But it's going to be weird, isn't it? You know, as if this past year, and of course, beginning part of 2021 due to the pandemic, as if this time hasn't been, you know, already weird enough, Duke not being in the tournament, that's just, wow. Like, what? I mean, again, you know, 1995, I was 5 years old the last time Coach K and Duke did not make the tournament. So weird times, man. And you know what? Just to briefly talk about, you know, the postseason in college hoops and what we're seeing, because, you know, what I'm going to do today is I'm going to touch upon the Detroit Lions as well. You know, I thought, why not? You know, we haven't really expounded upon the Lions really since Matthew Stafford took his talents to L.A., you know, since that trade happened between the Rams and the Lions. And I want to get to them in just a moment. But real briefly, I do want to talk about whether or not college basketball can pull off this bubble. Because I look at it, and it's such a good idea on yesterday's current sports. You know, you heard from Tom Izzo during his weekly press conference, his pre-Maryland press conference, and he talked about how, you know, after beating Michigan and then heading down, you know, for the Big Ten tournament, playing today, of course, playing as I speak, of course. If they do, let's just say, you know, somehow, some way, Michigan State makes it all the way to Sunday. But I think if I didn't misinterpret him, listening to him during his press conference, regardless of what happens today, you know, Michigan State may stay in the bubble out in Indianapolis, may stay there for Selection Sunday, you know. And if they were to make it to Sunday playing in that championship game, they would just kind of stay there and just quarantine and just prep there, you know, and just stay in their hotels. Just weird because, of course, the tournament will be taking place out in Indy already. So, you know, it's just weird, man. It's going to be a weird time. And, you know, the entire tournament, you know, which will begin on March 18th and run until April 5th. I mean, we're talking about 68 teams in Indianapolis at different hotels creating this massive, massive bubble. How realistic is that? Because, you know, we saw it done flawlessly by the National Basketball Association in last year's playoffs. But again, we're talking about the NBA playoffs, where you don't have 68 teams making the postseason. All right, you're dealing with that most, you know, what, 16 teams? And it was cut down from that, I believe, for the bubble. So it was a lot less personnel involved in that bubble. But how do you pull off 68 teams safely inside a bubble without having some kind of major outbreak? Is that realistic? I don't think it is. I don't think it is because it's not just the players and coaches, but, you know, they have training staff as well. I don't know. Well, I'm guessing family won't be able to come visit these hotels. It'll just be team personnel. But it's not just players and coaches. You know, when you talk about trainers as well, you know, video coordinators, I'm sure, are going to be there. And I'm sure, you know, teams are going to be so paranoid about having a positive test like that of Duke, right, that they're going to make sure that, okay, they get creative with some of this stuff. I mean, you want to take inside of this bubble as only the essential people, the least amount of people possible, so that you limit the possibility of a COVID-19 outbreak. That's what you want. So, you know, you're not going to be having, like, you know, the ball boys and the water boys coming on this trip with you as well. You know, I don't even think you're going to have, are you going to have the scout team with you? I don't think so. You know, it's going to be a lot of just the essentials, the essential personnel that you need. Because 68 teams is a lot. I mean, you multiply that. I mean, we're talking about thousands of people inside this bubble, and I don't know how you contain it. And can you trust all of the players to not break any rules here? And then the fact that if you have one outbreak with a team, because I'm sure multiple teams are going to be staying at the same hotel, I guess you're going to have to just keep them, or try to keep them, on one single floor so they're not interacting with other teams. But can you just imagine if there is an outbreak with one of these teams, then you got to do contact tracing and say, okay, who have these players, or what player you know, has contacted other personnel, whether that be coaches or other players. And it's this whole thing. One outbreak can derail the NCAA tournament dreams of many different teams out there. I'll just say this. Expect some drama, folks. Expect some drama, because this thing could really get out of hand. And, you know, on tomorrow's Current Sports, I'm going to comb through the rules and show you, try to give you a glimpse into how college basketball plans on pulling this thing off. But I'll just say this, it will not be easy, okay? And we're talking about just a conference tournament with the ACC tournament and Duke having a breakout. So, and to be honest, I just think that, you know, with that latest story, I mean, that kind of just put Coach K out of his misery, right? I mean, you could just see that coaching this Duke team was incredibly frustrating, and now he's got some time to just kind of sit back and recalibrate and think about next year. So, yeah, man. And then don't even get me started. You know, also, you know, going back to the situation with the bubble, the ticket situation is very complicated out in Indiana. I'll just say that, because they do plan on having fans at Lucas Oil Stadium for the NCAA tournament. But, you know, it's a mess. It has become a mess. Right now, there will be limited capacity for the Big Dance. So the NCAA has announced that it will allow up to 25% capacity for all rounds. So, yeah, man. It's spread across. It's not just, you know, Lucas Oil Stadium. Other venues that play here, they're trying to spread things out so you don't have all, you know, 68 teams playing in one venue. You know, the tournament will be years if that happened. But, you know, you also have Hinkle Fieldhouse, Indiana Farmers Coliseum, and Bankers Life Fieldhouse in play alongside Lucas Oil Stadium. And, you know, you talk about 25% capacity. When you look at the numbers, that brings down to a little over 2,000 at Hinkle, 1,700 at Indiana Farmers Coliseum, 4,500 at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and a little over 17,000, 17,500 to be exact, at Lucas Oil Stadium. So, yeah, I'm going to break down that ticket situation in just a moment and talk about a little bit of drama inside of it. On tomorrow's Current Sports, I'll break that down. But what I want to do right now is I want to hit our first break. And when we come back, I want to talk about the Detroit Lions and the moves that they have made to go in full, all-out rebuild mode, which is needed for this franchise. I think that Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell are doing what is needed, and it's going to be painful. Rebuilding is not fun, folks. So I want to warn Detroit Lions fans out there how uncomfortable this will be. But, you know, it's like taking medicine when you were younger, you know, or eating your broccoli when you were younger, man. You know, eating those vegetables that you hated so dearly when you just wanted a big bowl of Captain Crunch. It is necessary. Painful, but it's good for you in the long run. All right? So we'll hit this first break. When we come back, we'll chat Honolulu Blue football. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. I want to talk Detroit Lions football. Again, you know, I'm not live and haven't been live since the pandemic hit, forcing Current Sports to be produced and hosted from the friendly confines of my dining room table, which we're still doing, of course, And, you know, Michigan State and Maryland tipping off at 11:30 a.m. Can't really comment on that because I record the show in the morning and then have to edit it myself and then get it to my engineers. So I can't really comment on Michigan State and Maryland. If I had to guess, I think that Michigan State handled business and moves on for that rematch against Michigan. But I could be totally wrong. You never know with college basketball in March. That would be my guess, especially, you know, the fact that, you know, in Big Ten basketball, it is so hard to beat the same team twice. You know, Maryland may have handed it to Michigan State in that last meeting out in College Park. But, you know, I feel like this is an entirely different Michigan State men's basketball team. Rocket Watts is starting to wake up a bit. You know, Aaron Henry is turning into a superstar and even getting some consistent buckets now from Mr. Josh Langford and some consistent play from the bigs. So that would be my guess. But, hey, what do I know, right? So with that being said, and I can't really, you know, dive into the game, I do want to talk some Detroit Lions football because I got to be honest. I really, really like what the Detroit Lions are doing right now because they are saying, we understand that this roster is not a championship roster, and we have to completely tear this thing down from its roots and have a complete overhaul. They understand that. They're not trying to force a round peg through a square, you know, hole. And, you know, it's like when you go through a rebuild process, it is incredibly uncomfortable, especially for a franchise that already is known for losing, like the Detroit Lions are. You know, because I already know there are going to be some Detroit Lions fans out there that when the losses begin to pile up, you're going to say, oh, this is just the same old Lions. SOL. Going to see it on Twitter left and right. Dan Campbell's not the right guy. We made the wrong move. Bring Jim Caldwell back. Brad Holmes, what are you doing? Because it's so uncomfortable. Because naturally, as a fan, you want to win regardless of the circumstances. But I'm going to warn you that this Detroit Lions team, will be a very bad team. They should be one of the worst NFL teams in the game next season. And people are going to criticize, you know, Jared Goff. I think he's an average quarterback at best. So we kind of expect that already. Don't expect him to come in here and be, you know, that same quarterback that led the Rams to the Super Bowl that one year. He's not that guy. He's not. You know, the proof is certainly in the pudding when you look at these past couple of seasons, you know, throughout his tenure in L.A. And you're going to have a lot of fans out there saying, man, we got this dude for Stafford. I mean, and Stafford's probably going to, it's going to be uncomfortable, really uncomfortable, because, you know, it's always uncomfortable when you see another player, especially a franchise centerpiece like Matthew Stafford, for goodness sake, go to another team and have success. But that has happened with multiple former Detroit Lions players over the years. It's going to be incredibly uncomfortable when you see the greatest Detroit Lions quarterback of all time make the playoffs, like I do believe he will, out there in L.A. And you're going to say to yourself, man, why couldn't he do that in Detroit? Well, defense, need I go on that rant again? You know, the Detroit Lions, Matthew Stafford, you know, Detroit Lions fans who hate on Matthew Stafford, I just don't understand it. But anyway, I'm just warning you guys, this is going to be uncomfortable. But the Lions are doing everything right here, especially when I heard, and this further hammers home this point and further gives me confidence that maybe Brad Holmes, that maybe he knows what he's doing. Maybe Dan Campbell knows what he's doing. Because when they decided not to franchise tag Kenny Golladay this week, it told me that they are all in on the process. Kenny Golladay, on Tuesday afternoon, he became basically a free man. The Lions choosing not to use their franchise tag on Kenny Golladay, and now he's set to hit free agency when the legal tampering period ends on Monday. So the Lions are going to lose a lot of talented players this year, and it's going to be a bit scary for the Fanatics out there. It's going to be very jarring for you to see a lot of this talent go to other franchises and probably have a lot of success. The Lions are doing everything right. The window is closed. The Lions' chances to win it all and go to that ever-elusive Super Bowl are out the window, at least for the next, in my opinion, couple of seasons. It's over. I know that sucks to hear, Lions fans. You don't want to hear that, but it is something that you must go through in order to get on the other side and be a possible playoff contender once again. Franchise tagging Kenny Galladay, or if you signed him to a long-term deal, that directly hinders the process that we are talking about here, that I am talking about here. All right? You need this. You need to free up cap room so you can make some room to bring in new talent. And you know, what the Lions got in exchange for Stafford, my goodness, amazing. And you know, the conversation that we're going to be having leading up to the NFL draft now is what will the Lions do with that top 10 pick? What will the Lions do? Will they go with a quarterback? I don't think they necessarily need to right now. I think that they, you know, can do something else with that number 7 pick because they have draft equity right now. That equity that the Lions have built up now, when you look at the future draft picks they have down the road, they can punt on a QB this year early in the NFL draft process and get one next year, you know, where the talent pool at that position may be a bit deeper. They don't have to go that route. And now with Kenny Galladay going, and I know Lions fans, you know, hate to hear this because, you know, if this does happen and the Lions decide to go with a wide receiver with that pick this year, you're going to have Lions fans saying, what? We've done this in the past before. We always go with a receiver when we have a high pick. What is going on here? But this is a year when you realistically, when realistically it may be a good move. Because you have draft equity built up where you can go and get your QB or another position later on down the line or later on in the other rounds of this year's draft. So this is going to be very uncomfortable. I just want to warn Detroit Lions fans about that. This will not be easy. And they are going to be really, really bad in 2021 and probably 2022 as well. But they are on the right track. So, and you know, some names I look at when it comes to free agency for the Lions, I mean, you know, they can try their hand in free agency with guys like, I don't know, maybe Josh Reynolds, Sammy Watkins, Curtis Samuel. His name comes to mind as well. They also have a potential starter, you know, don't forget this, in Quintez Cephas. They already signed Tyrell Williams, who will be expected to do some things that the Lions, you know, expected in Marvin Jones. So, you know, those are some other names when you talk about the wide receiver position specifically that, you know, that you could possibly hear in the coming weeks with this team. So, you know, extra money the Lions save with letting Galladay walk. They can really rebuild here. So that 7 pick is going to be interesting. You know, and they really do. You know, if they do decide to go with a receiver with that 7 pick, which I don't think will be outlandish and ludicrous to do so, I mean, they could score one of the draft's best receivers in maybe a Ja'Marr Chase, a Jalen Waddle, even Heisman Trophy winner Devontae Smith. How big would that be, right? So, yeah, man. You know, these are things that must happen in order for the Lions to fully complete this rebuild process. Because when you're in a rebuild process, you can't just dip your toe in the water. You got to be either all in or out and try and, you know, convince yourself that, hey, you got the pieces that you need to win a championship. The Lions aren't there yet. They're just not. This happens, folks. You know, I think of, you know, speaking of the Rams, I think of in 2017 when, you know, Sean McVay took over a Rams team that had Kenny Britt, Brian Quick, Tavon Austin as their primary receivers. That offseason, the Rams drafted Cooper Kupp and Josh Reynolds. They signed Robert Woods, traded for Sammy Watkins, and just like that, they had a completely new and improved receiving core. They went through that process, letting some pretty big talent go. And then rebuilding in the draft, trading, and then bam. You got a core that you can work with. So I like what Brad Holmes is doing, man. You know, I can't really criticize any move or moves that he has made. I think that, you know, he is he understands and is doing the right thing for this franchise. And it's going to be very uncomfortable, especially for a fiery guy like Dan Campbell, to lose a lot. He's probably going to lose a lot in these next two seasons. You know, and he's probably going to bite a lot of kneecaps because of it. He's never going to live that one down. But it's good in the long run. I want to know what you guys think, Detroit Lions fans out there. Do you fully understand? Are you ready to cope with the fact that your team is going to continue to be horrid for at least two seasons? Can you deal with that? And what are your thoughts of the moves that Brad Holmes is making right now? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Leave us a voicemail at that number. You can also weigh in courtesy of social media. You can leave us a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/WKAR News. Leave us a comment anywhere there. And you can also tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. Let's hit our final break. When we come back, I'll have Throwback Thursday for you guys. And I also want to touch upon what Susie Merchant and the Michigan State women's basketball team is doing right now, getting a big win against Penn State on Wednesday in the Big Ten tournament. That's right. Can't forget about the ladies. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. And before I move on here, I would be remiss if I didn't rain down the praises that are justified, fully justified, for, you know, so well-deserving for the Michigan State women's basketball team, because this is a squad that can do some special things here in the postseason. And looking at what they were able to do in the opening game of the Big Ten tournament for them, wow, impressive. And we all know that the straws that stir that drink for Susie Merchant are Nia Clouden and Eliza Winston. When those two play well, first off, it's so fun to watch. It's just beautiful basketball. They are so skilled in so many different areas. Second off, they win. Michigan State wins. When Winston and Clouden are doing what they do, they win. It was a 75-66 dub over number 10 Penn State in the second round contest, in that second round contest at Bankers Life Fieldhouse in the Big Ten tournament. And Winston was fantastic. I mean, she knocked down 5 3-pointers, had a game-high 23 points, and now Michigan State will play number 2 seed. Michigan State is the number 7 seed. 2 versus 7, Indiana. Michigan State and Indiana, 6:30 p.m. tonight. So I'll be locked into that. It's just a joy to watch those two play. Cloudon, who, as I mentioned on yesterday's Current Sports, was named first team All Big Ten on Monday. Nia Cloudon poured in 18 points and was just solid. Solid. And she actually had been held under 10 points. Nia Cloudon had been held to under 10 points in the last three games before that 18-point outburst yesterday. So 4 players total scored in double digits for the Michigan State women's basketball team. Maura Joyner and Taylor Parks. Joyner had 13, 6 rebounds off the bench, and Parks added 10. So I love this, man. And, you know, Michigan State women's basketball, they are certainly going to make the big dance. And it's just always exciting, man, when you both have, you know, Tom Izzo Spartans and Susie Merchant Spartans in the tournament competing. Just shows you, man, that the consistency when it comes to college basketball at Michigan State is a thing that is rare. It really is at other universities. You know, we take it for granted here in East Lansing. Enjoy this. So Michigan State women's basketball, 6:30 p.m. tonight against number 2 seed Indiana. We'll see if the Michigan State women's basketball team can pull off the upset. All right? And, again, you know, I started segment A by talking about just how weird of a time this is. You know, for the tournament, it's going to be like drama every day once the tournament begins, because I just don't know how you can contain an outbreak that is probably inevitable when it comes to the big dance. You know, 68 teams in Indianapolis inside of this quote unquote bubble. I say quote unquote because 68 teams, a lot of people in this bubble. A lot of people that you're trying to contain. You multiply 68, you know, by like, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 times that. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. But you're going to see a lot of teams. I think if there is an outbreak with a team, you're going to have to just test everybody, see who's positive, and go from there. Because the NCAA is saying that you only need 5 healthy players to play. You know, the committee right now is gauging its protocols, and I'm seeing on ESPN that they are saying that all you need is 5 healthy players to play in the tournament. And, you know, when it comes to how about a coach, they're going to get back with people on that. So if Tom Izzo and his coaching staff somehow get sick, and let's say all of the roster gets sick except 5 players, then, hey, the committee is saying, yeah, you can suit up and give it a go still. It's going to be very fluid, folks. Very, very fluid. You know, and you look at what's going to happen here. You know, players will have their own rooms. Teams will have their own floors. Just like I predicted at the beginning of the show. I'm looking at the article now as they break down the protocols, you know, over the course of 19 days. So players will have their own room. Teams will have their own floors at designated hotels, you know, throughout their stay in Indiana. Players and coaches will be subjected to frequent virus testing and contact tracing. To augment that effort, I'm reading directly from the ESPN piece here. To augment that effort, when they are at practice and in games, players will wear devices. So some technology coming in play here. Will wear devices that track their location and keep track of people that they have been in close proximity with. Some high-tech stuff here. Helpful, of course, if one of those close contacts tests positive. So 2 weeks ago, the NCAA released its policy about how and when teams that make the tournament might be replaced if they are struck with the virus. The bracket comes out on Sunday, and after 6 p.m. on Tuesday, teams that make the field cannot be replaced if they get sick, and their scheduled opponents would simply move on in the bracket. So we could see some drama here, folks. And dare I say it, there may be an asterisk next to a few teams that could possibly move on if their said opponent is ousted and booted from the tournament due to a COVID-19 outbreak. And you better believe that is going to cause some drama. But hey, what are you going to do? For, you know, people out there, let's just say, let me just talk to my Spartan fans out there. Michigan State, if the Spartans are eliminated from the tournament due to a COVID-19 outbreak, you can't, and I don't think, you know, the logical fans out there won't do this, but there are going to be a few knuckleheads, if this happens, that say, oh, well, Arizona is a fluke because they didn't play us. You know, let alone if Michigan State's opponent, like, goes all the way and wins the tournament, there are going to be a lot of people out there saying, well, they didn't play us because we had COVID-19. Like, stop it. We all know that. And whoever wins the tournament, whoever wins, it's going to have an asterisk next to it because it's the year of COVID. But don't sit up there and just be sour about it the whole time. This is going to be very unusual. And you got to get comfortable with the fact that this is going to be very uncomfortable. So, yeah, man. Knock on wood. I really hope that Michigan State is able to go through and pull this thing off. But only time will tell, man. Only time will tell. What are your thoughts? 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-WKAR. Go to Facebook.com/WKAR News. Leave us a comment anywhere there on our Facebook page. And you can also tweet us. Tweet me directly at AlMartinWKAR or tweet the show at WKAR News. All right. So what I want to do right now, I haven't done this in some weeks now. Is have a throwback Thursday for you guys as we put a bow on this Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports, where we look back at this particular date and bring to you some of the biggest stories and headlines in the world of sports on this date in the history of our world. All right, so today is March 11th. On this day back in 1882, the Intercollegiate Lacrosse Association was formed in Princeton, New Jersey. On this day back in 1892, the first organized women's basketball game was played. How about that? The first game was at Smith College between students and faculty members, actually. But that started women's basketball. First, you know, the first recording of a women's basketball game being played on this day, March 11th, back in 1892. On this day back in 1909, the first gold medal to a perfect score bowler was awarded to A.C. Jellison by the American Bowling Congress. I really wish that I could bowl higher than like a 150. Like 130 is my average, which isn't bad, but man, a perfect score of 300. Whew, that'd be nice. All right, shout out to all my bowlers out there. I believe some of our listeners like Ben. Ben is a big bowler and is in a bowling league. On this day back in 1930, Babe Ruth, the great Babe Ruth, he signed a 2-year contract with the New York Yankees for the sum of, peep this, show you how things have changed, $80,000, folks. $80,000. My oh my, has the moolah changed or what, right? On this day back in 1948, Reginald Weir became the first black tennis player to participate in a U.S. Indoor Lawn Tennis Association tournament. On this day back in 1978, Bobby Hull of the Winnipeg Jets joined Gordie Howe by getting his 1,000th career goal. On this day back in 1979, March 11th, 1979, Randy Holt of the LA Kings was penalized 9 times for a total of 67 minutes in the first period of a game against the Philadelphia Flyers. 9 times, Randy. Hey, man, take a chill pill. Jeesh, 67 minutes. That's like the whole game. All right, on this day back in 1990, the year I was born, Jennifer Capriati, at 13 years old, played her first professional tennis match. Capriati was good. Also on that same day, Dennis Savard of the Chicago Blackhawks, he also scored his 1,000th career point. So you had on this day back in 1990 and 1978, Bobby Hull and Dennis Savard both scoring their 1,000th career goals. Maybe somebody does that tonight in the NHL. I don't know. And also on this day back in 2004, I'll stop at 04 here because of time, Todd Bertuzzi of the Vancouver Canucks, he was suspended by the National Hockey League for hitting Steve Moore of the Colorado Avalanche in the side of the head from behind, driving his head into the ice in a game on March 8th. Moore landed face first with Bertuzzi on top of him. He suffered a broken neck, a concussion, deep cuts on his face. The NHL suspended Bertuzzi for the remainder of the regular season and the playoffs and announced that his eligibility would be assessed the following season and would take into account Moore's health and the progression of his recovery. The Canucks organization was also fined $250,000. If you look at the video of that injury, totally brutal, just incredibly brutal, folks. And, you know, I think that the punishment was more than deserved in that situation. So, yeah, man. And when it comes to, and he would, you know, Moore, I mean, he laid motionless on the ice for 10 minutes. He was carried off on a stretcher. And, you know, the incident actually ended Moore's professional hockey career, and it resulted in a criminal assault charge against Bertuzzi and a civil lawsuit against Bertuzzi and the Canucks. And back in August of 2014, it was reported that the lawsuit ended with all parties agreeing to a confidential settlement. So, yeah, that was a very, very tough incident. That happened on this day back in 2004. And on that same day, another incident of less importance, in 2004, Major League Baseball banned THG, the Health Policy Advisory Committee of Management and the Players Association, unanimously determined that THG builds muscle mass. So there you have that, folks. That will do it for Throwback Thursday, and that will do it for this edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Again, since because, you know, we hit the air, you know, same time Michigan State basketball was getting it on against Maryland, I will have a full recap and discussion on that game during tomorrow's Current Sports. But I want you guys to have a fantastic rest of your Thursday afternoon and evening. We'll see you on the Friday edition of Current Sports. Be smart, be safe, and as always, be easy, people.